The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Cosi. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Cosi starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Cosi.org.
Hey, I'm Steph.
I'm Alex.
And this is Not Today.
And we're live.
Hey.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm fantastic, but I've had a weird day.
Oh. I'm sorry to hear that.
I had some very weird fish.
Oh, God. Let's not even. We're survivors today.
Yeah.
Alex cooked bad fish. It made our entire place smell terrible. And then he tried to poison me by feeding me a small piece of it without telling me that it was bad.
Yep, that's on me. And I fully own that. But I was paid back in the form of me throwing up the fish that I ate. So,
but yeah. It's okay. We forgive. I know you weren't trying to actually poison me. It was just, it was tough. Tough to be eating fish today.
Yeah, tough look. But other than Fishgate, we have, I think, a new concept.
What's the new concept?
That a listener has given us an entire story.
We've done that before.
Have we?
Yeah. It was about a hurricane. I can't remember which one. Was it Katrina?
Was that a listener?
That was a listener.
I forgot about that. That was the one where their house flooded.
Yeah.
And then they had to save their dog.
Yes, that was a full listener story.
Oh my God. Yeah, that was a great story.
I know.
Okay, so this is not a new concept.
It's not one that we've done many times. Like, we've only done that one time before. So this is number
Part two.
Part two. Yeah.
Okay, well, who was it?
So I have fake names for our narrator today.
Correct.
We're going to be calling our people in the story Slip and Mondo.
Did they come up with that?
They sure did.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Slip and Mondo.
Yeah. This story is about cave diving and how these two listeners narrowly escaped their watery grave.
Wow. Okay. Well, Slip is making a lot of sense now.
Well, I think it's a reference to something. I just don't personally know what the reference is.
That's okay.
Yeah. And that's fine. That's not the point of the story. But I will say that cave diving is quite possibly my worst thing that I could imagine myself doing.
Yep.
Because one, I don't like being in bodies of water that aren't pools or hot tubs. And two, I'm claustrophobic. And yeah, the combination of specifically cave diving sounds like an absolute nightmare to me. But I will say that the people who do it are extremely impressive to me. Like, it's a highly technical, really brave, impressive thing to do as a hobby or as something that you enjoy doing in your life. It just simply could not be me.
Yeah, never.
This is the farthest from me.
The thought of me underwater in a tight hole.
Yeah.
Not cool. Like, thinking about being a mile under earth in water, also not cool.
Like, caving in general makes it hard for me to breathe. Like, when I see videos that pop up on like TikTok or wherever where someone is squeezing their body through a tight hole, it actually physically makes me, like, my breath labored, if you will. Like, I actually get like upset. So picturing that underwater with like a limited amount of oxygen, I'd be toast immediately. Like,
yeah, for sure. Well, let us talk about Slip and Mondo and how yes. They just seem to not care about that.
Oh, no, they care.
Well, I guess, I mean, they're not scared of it.
I think they probably have a healthy level of fear at this point.
At this point, yes. But
and I'm sure they did before. You have to respect the thing you're doing to be able to do it. So, right. You know. But yeah, I'm really excited to read this story to you today. It is quite long, so buckle up.
And shut up at me.
But yeah, I'm going to be reading it to you almost verbatim as they sent it to me. So yeah, without further ado, let's jump in. My buddy Mondo and I had an incident about a year ago that shook us up very badly. This is our story as best as we can figure out what happened. Mondo and I have been diving caves for decades. However, I blame myself for this situation as I have the lion's share of those dives, and it was my suggestion to perform this very dangerous shortcut. We have enough redundancy on almost every piece of life support equipment to survive almost anything except panic and running out of breathing gas. This turned basically into a solo dive for each of us as we were each alone. But since this incident, we have ended dives that started to get a little funky way before we used to end them in similar situations. The difference between open water diving and cave diving is like the difference between juggling rubber balls and juggling running chainsaws. They are both juggling, but at least the inherent and immediate danger is much more apparent with the chainsaws.
I love this analogy.
Me too. It actually was very helpful to me. I was like, okay, that makes sense. There are numerous social media posts about cave diving, and they are especially good at ripping anyone for anything. For that reason, we are using the names Slip Mahoney and Mondo Slade. These names are obviously jokes, which some of you may get. Which I have said, I do not, but I'm sure someone else does. Also, just a side note from me, we're going to be jumping around a little bit in the story, and we're going to start just after their terrifying dive.
Okay.
And then we're going to go back in time.
Okay, I like this.
So our location is Peacock Springs, Luraville, Florida. The date is February 2nd, 2023, so not very long ago, and the time was approximately 1:58 p.m. We start our story underwater, approximately 15 feet below the surface. At this point, I am almost beyond a doubt sure that my longtime cave diving buddy Mondo is dead, and there is nothing I can do. Mondo and I have been friends and diving buddies, both ocean, but mostly cave, for about 24 years. Even though we lived in different ends of California, we kept in touch and have been diving together consistently ever since. Mondo and I both moved to Florida about the same time a few years ago and continued our cave diving together. We probably have cave dived together at least 150 times. But at this point, my immediate concern is decompression. There is no point in rushing to the surface. A minute or two longer makes no difference in terms of Mondo's survival, I am sure. Mondo long ago ran out of breathing gas, according to my estimate. He is either dead or found a way out. Those are the only two options I can think of, unless he found a pocket of sufficient fresh air that nobody knows about. Neither my primary dive computer nor my backup dive computer, worn both on my left arm, showed any required decompression, but both were very close to requiring me to perform a decompression stop, even while taking into account my extra percentage of oxygen in all my tanks. For the sake of safety, I am now stopped at 15 feet of depth for a minute, not my usual 3 minutes. Mondo and I always add 3 minutes onto any dive as an extra fudge factor, whether decompression is technically required or not. Even if we have 90 minutes of required decompression, we will still throw at least 3 minutes extra at the end of that time. Decompression problems tend to occur in areas of former trauma due to restriction of blood flow in these areas, and both of us are covered in those. But Mondo and I have been diving for decades, and the body never forgets previous insults to it. Considering we are older divers and have had many injuries/surgeries, we are vigilant about decompression safety. Upon surfacing, I usually rest for a few minutes as there are still microscopic bubbles in my system, whether or not a decompression obligation is required. I had no choice but to get out of my gear and to get to the proper authorities as soon as possible. There was always a chance Mondo had found an air pocket and could be rescued and might have some time still left. However, the air pockets in this cave system tend to only be about 1 to 2 inches high, and even if you could get your mouth into them, they would only last a few breaths.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Cosi. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Cosi starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Cosi.org.
We were very far back in that cave system, finding enough of these well-placed air pockets as you randomly check the ceiling while swimming upside down, sometimes in very limited visibility, is very unlikely to get you very far toward the closest exit. There is a wooden platform, jutting into the spring, built by cave divers about 20 years ago, that facilitates getting your tanks off before climbing out. I was snapping my heavy gear off like a man possessed. A buddy of ours was in the water in front of me teaching a class of potential new cave divers. This is a commonly used teaching cave, as there are plenty of wide open passages, as well as, obviously, quote-unquote, gateways to hell. It's good to show the openings to the most dangerous passages to the students, just so they understand that they are present in this cave, and that even after a full cave certification, you should only stay within your abilities until you're comfortable with these gateways. One of my buddies is currently teaching his class on the surface before descending and sees me and yells out asking if I'm okay. I explained to him what had happened and where I lost Mondo. He told his class to get out of the water and he went to look for Mondo, or at least his body. I am now going back to the parking area and one of his students is on the phone with 911. Two other friends of ours, who just happened to be diving there that day, were at their cars. They saw me without Mondo and asked where he was. When I said what happened, everybody in the parking lot, probably about 8 or 9 other divers, overheard, stopped what they were doing, and turned white. One of our friends, Brian, decided to drive back up the road to get his empty tanks filled quickly to help look for Mondo's body, since he had just finished his dive and his tanks were low. Likely the only reasonable chance Mondo had to still be alive was to exit at another opening way back under the marsh/woodland area where there is a crack in the limestone. Brian, while driving his car, going to get his tanks filled, drove within 20 yards of where this opening is in the limestone, and he found Mondo coming out on the gravel path hiking back. Mondo was quite emotional about my presumed drowning, as well as his close call. Brian immediately informed Mondo of my safely exiting the cave system just a few minutes earlier. They got in the car and came back to the parking lot. Mondo and I see each other, and it was a hug fest with everybody there with lots of wet eyes. I even hugged the guy who called 911 when he called to cancel. Our exit was basically as two solo cave divers, independent of each other, in possibly the worst circumstances any cave diver can imagine. Almost no visibility, spatially lost, no line, low on breathing gas, very tight crawling through rock, sort of the quinfecta of the worst that can happen. The fact that one of us, much less both of us, is still upright and breathing is a testament to the lack of panic exhibited by us, our experience and training, and being exceedingly fortunate. Mondo has indicated to me that it was so unlikely that both of us would make it out alive, and that there had to have been another factor involved. I am not arguing with him, and am just thankful. Mondo thinks that whatever ethereal location each of us may have been headed to did not want us, at least yet. One of the most important things to consider in a cave diving buddy is the likelihood of panic, which will kill you and your buddy as effectively as a gun to the head. Many years ago, I was doing a job in San Diego. Mondo, who lived in the San Diego area at the time, and I got together to do a very late, very black, night shipwreck dive about 1 or 2 miles offshore of San Diego, diving from his boat. Upon surfacing, I did not see his boat anywhere. All I could see was the shore, which was way too far away to swim to. Mondo surfaced right near me just a few seconds later. He explained that the light on his boat had probably failed and we'll find it, which we obviously did, eventually. He impressed me with his lack of tension, and I would remember that for future cave dives together, which were still in our future, as this was before we had ever entered a cave together. But I knew he would be a good cave diving buddy, no matter his skill level. Cave diving, at least in Florida, is not what you think of when people talk about cave diving. Florida much more resembles the conditions shown in the cave rescue of the Thai soccer boys, which we are familiar with.
We told that story
long time
years ago at this point.
Yes, yeah. But those were bad conditions.
Yeah, they
we
were
know
bad.
That much.
I remember that story so well, though,
yeah.
For whatever reason.
Yeah, it's one that sticks with you, for sure.
Yeah.
It is sometimes much worse, sometimes much better, depending on cave and river / groundwater conditions. When you see underwater caves in National Geographic, the photos are posed with many strobe lights over many days, with many divers holding these strobes in the most beautiful parts of the most beautiful caves in some of the areas of the world known for their beautiful flooded caves. Plus, add in Photoshop. Many times, Florida caves are nothing but mud that is thin enough to swim through, and sometimes the current is really flowing. For these reasons, we always have somewhat permanent lines, more closely resembling strings, but much stronger, that are laid out in some of the more popular cave systems leading from entrances into the main passages of the cave. Secondary passages may or may not have lines, and likely they are not physically attached to the main lines. The jumps to these secondary lines may be 5 feet or several hundred feet. The further the distance to the secondary line, the more likely these secondary passages are very dangerous, in parentheses, gateways to hell. And thus, the secondary lines will only be found by divers experienced enough to be able to find them. The original explorers left them in place as they advanced through the system and have been maintained by subsequent divers. The main lines lead to exits, while secondary lines can lead anywhere. Following lines that have been permanently put in place when jumping to a secondary line, you may jump to yet another secondary line, to yet another, and yet another, etc. It's important to understand which line is which and what direction you're going. And sometimes this has to all be done by feel.
Wow.
So when I said this is very technical, I meant it. Like, I've read through this story so many times now, and I was like, this is really in depth. Like,
I know. Well, you started out and there was already terminology that I caught on to, and I was like, oh, I think I know what it means, but it seems like this is lingo.
Yes. Yeah. But they do a very good job of explaining. So yeah, it's all very complicated to someone who does not cave dive, but
yeah,
hey,
we
learn something new every day.
True. Thank you, Slip.
Yes. We also keep lines wrapped on several reels that we carry with us on each dive. These reels are mostly used to attach the main lines to the secondary lines when we venture into new passageways. We might also attach secondary line to secondary line, etc. That way, even in zero visibility, we can still feel our way to the exit if need be. These secondary passageways also may not have line in them, so instead of just attaching to the secondary lines, we actually have to put in new lines from one of our reels to continue on. Sometimes these new passages we are swimming / crawling into that we think are unlined, after a while, may be shown to have some line in them that is way past being able to be seen from the other line that we came in on. All of these lines can vary in length from several hundred feet to thousands of feet in length. Unless we are in a new and unexplored passage and worth future subsequent investigation, our reels are picked up on the way out of the cave and not left in place, as that line can confuse subsequent divers who expect permanent lines to be in certain spots and passages and may get confused by a jumble of lines left in that area that they were not expecting. Then add in potentially zero visibility to this equation and no good directional input, and you can have a problem. Comparing a map of the cave system to the real world is akin to looking at a map of a wilderness area and thinking it is possible to follow a heavily overgrown trail on a moonless night with poor peripheral vision. You assume the trail is well marked, there are no side patches of dirt looking like a trail, the schematic is accurate, you are not crawling through a space not much bigger than you. It is all horizontal and not vertical, and you have all the light you need and all the air you could possibly ever breathe. In reality, this cave system is as black as you can imagine, obviously, thus necessitating lights that are a compromise between strength, duration, and small size. Some of these passages are barely big enough to swim slash crawl through, even requiring the removal of tanks to fit your body through. Some portions of passages are vertical, both up and down. The entire area is more akin to a block of Swiss cheese. There are myriads of passages on your sides and on top of you and below you that may or may not do anything other than pinch tighter and tighter until you are trapped. The Peacock system, no matter how many cave divers have gone through the main passages, has a few secondary tunnels and crawlways that can definitely kill you. Even the main passageways can kill you. The father of cave diving, Sheck Exley, who passed in a cave, believed that bringing students into this system was a mistake because all of the areas and gateways are not really portrayed on any maps, and newly minted cave divers will think they know this system and either venture into them on purpose or by accident. So now that I've described a lot of technical cave diving jargon and lingo, we're going to get into Slip's version of the story. And so just for a basic understanding of what happened, they went into the cave together. Somewhere down the line, something happened, and then they split up from each other, and they weren't sure where they were because they had, like, zero visibility. So they couldn't tell if they were near each other or far away from each other, and then they ended up exiting the cave at different points. So now I'm going to read Slip's part. This narrative is presented from my point of view with some descriptions and editing I attained from Mondo to try to ascertain what each of us was doing and thinking, all while maybe bumping each other, maybe inches from each other, maybe dozens of feet from each other. With zero visibility, we may never know exactly where we were in relation to each other. We may have bumped each other, or it was just rocks that we were scraping as we were squeezing through very tight rock formations, bending and twisting through half-hitch-type tunnels, possibly upside down, while not being able to see anything, including our breathing gas, pressure gauges, while digging through mud and silt. Sounds like a nightmare.
Sounds like a da-da-da-da gateway to hell.
Sure does. Much of the problem portion of this dive was basically in mud. All we could make out was a brownish, yellowish color in front of our masks with our lights. It is doubtful we could have even made out each other's lights, except in certain areas, even being right next to each other. Sometimes closing your eyes seems to help spatial awareness to try to figure out the 3D scenario you are currently hopelessly stuck in. Neither one of us was in a position to help the other. Neither one of us had any idea where we were, and only an extremely vague idea, and quite possibly mistaken idea, of what direction we were headed. It was very easy to get turned around without the slightest clue as to where we were. Besides the horizontal vectors, there were also vertical vectors that can twist you around and completely screw up your sense of direction. If this cave system had a flow, which most caves in Florida have very significant, it might have given us a general idea of at least what direction we were facing in terms of the exit. But also, with flow, it would have cleared out whatever silt and mud we stirred up while crawling through these passages to a point. As it was, the stirred up visibility would last much longer than the breathing gas still had left in our tanks. Thus, waiting for it to clear was not an option. And so the dive begins. Now we're going back in time to the beginning of the dive. This is the same location as before, just a little bit earlier at 11:35 a.m. We had planned a dive that would take us to a place in the Peacock Cave system called Challenge Sink. There is nothing more special about this spot than any of the other tens of thousands of feet of intertwined Swiss cheese passages in this cave system, but the journey is the adventure. Challenge Sink is an opening that breaks through to the surface at a diameter of about 6 feet. The crack reaches down about 60 feet in depth to where the main passage lies. There are two basic tank setup types of hanging tanks on cave divers. The first method is back-mounted double tanks that are not capable of being taken off in an emergency, which is part of the problem, and extra tanks are mounted in front. The newer method, which Mondo and I adopted close to 15 years ago, circumvents this. This method attaches the two main tanks to the sides of your body, with the extra tank still in the frontal position. It does allow you to get into smaller spaces, and if you are still too big, side-mounted tanks can be removed to push through the small opening ahead of you and reattached later. I have done this a few times, and each time at that very moment, I start rethinking my life's choices.
Fair enough.
This was a long dive that required the use of three tanks each. The dive should take about 1.5 to 2 hours. Two tanks would be attached on our sides, plus one extra tank would be stored on our left or right flanks in front of the side-mounted tanks. This extra tank would be used initially to get us as far in as we could go with it, leaving enough gas for exiting safely with it, and then leave it to be retrieved and use it on the way out.
They take it as far as it will go in, and then they leave it, and then they'll pick it up on the way out, but then also use that same tank?
That's what I'm gathering.
Okay, so they probably use like less than half and then come back and use the other half plus 3 minutes or something like that.
Yeah, but they also have two other tanks. Like, they have three tanks total.
Oh, okay.
Mondo and I have dived with as many as 5 tanks attached to us. You must constantly keep your head clear so as not to confuse which regulator goes to which tank. We have been on dives where exotic breathing gas mixtures, like helium, oxygen, etc., have been used, and breathing from the wrong tank at the wrong time can lead to immediate seizure or unconsciousness and ensuing death. Sometimes doing this in tight, zero visibility areas.
Sure. Okay, just adding to the technical difficulty and wow factor.
Yep. Challenge Sink rises from the main passage via a tunnel that starts at about 30 degrees and angles up to about 80 degrees before reaching the surface. At the surface, there is very minimal rock to stand on, so it's not very relaxing as you are treading water for most of it. Also, a direct ascent to the surface is potentially troublesome, as we may have accumulated a little bit of decompression requirement at that point, or at least close to it. Mondo and I had no intention of surfacing for those reasons. Plus, there is always a potential ear-clearing issue anytime you surface. We would just look up at the surface and then turn around, as that was as far as our breathing gas supply could safely take us. We still needed to get back to our storage bottles, as we did not have enough gas to get all the way to the exit with only our side-mounted tanks. We are both now floating in. We drop down to the entrance into crystal clear 68 degree water. We drop down about 15 feet and headed down the cavern that bottoms out at about 30 feet. We checked our dive computers, tank pressure readings on all tanks, checked all three regulators, two of our three lights, the other guy's stuff, our mental headspace, etc. We give the go signal and Mondo heads off with me following about 10 feet behind. This partially sunlit cavern zone was left within about 30 feet of swimming, as it now turns into a cave with no immediate access to the surface. In maybe another 150 feet, we are heading into what is referred to as a restriction or tight area. The smallest of these restrictions are the ones where tanks are removed. This restriction, however, is a large restriction that means that the only issue is you can only go single file. It's about 100 feet long. After this passage, the cave opens up to an area strewn with large boulders on a slope that extends down about 35 feet further down. The boulders came from the ceiling and rained down over the years on this slope. About halfway down this slope is a very, very small tunnel that is hard to even see unless someone knows it's there. Years ago, Mondo and I went in there from the other side and were stuck for 14 minutes trying to get out. Back on the main line, we continued along this fairly large passage, after giving a dirty look toward the entrance of this small passage as we passed it. Much of this cave system has had permanent lines put in place to cover certain passages. As I stated in the discussion above, the line should always be followed, whether put in by yourself or existing. No transgressions of cave passages should ever be undertaken without a line. You should always be able to get out of the cave by feel if silt-out conditions occur. And it only takes one bad fin kick, or a fin too close to the underlying sediment, to wipe out all visibility for hours. Even with good visibility, determining which passage you need to take to get out can waste valuable time, and thus breathing gas, that you will need for exiting. Many of these passages can wedge you into a tight spot that you cannot back out from. And now, at about 1,800 feet in, the line we were on ended, and up ahead, about 20 feet, we are able to see the new line we were looking for that was running perpendicular to our present line. The new line continues in both directions. There should be no other lines present in this area. We swim about another 1,000 feet or so to get to the tunnel leading into Challenge Sink. Mondo gave the signal to turn, and I responded likewise. We turned, but now I was in the lead. When Mondo saw me move, he saw I was moving fast, and thinking I was bolting out of there for some reason, he would have tried to keep up with me. I just got forward a little bit faster and then started our usual pace to avoid hovering after dropping down the incline, which would have silted up the entire passage. However, Mondo's race to catch up with what he thought was me going very fast caused him to breathe harder, and thus the fogging problem he was already having with his mask became worse. We continued on and backtracked the way we had come in and jumped to the perpendicular line we had come in on. I was evidently going a little fast for him during the transit. I should have noticed, and he should have signaled. All these seemingly small things can add up. At this point, there is a curving of the line that goes past whatever appears to be some wide open and big passages immediately adjacent to the passage we are in. All of these are basically false passages. You can leave the main line and travel down what you think is an ongoing passage, only to be wedged into a crevice or hit a wall. Only one of these passages goes through to an ongoing passage, and if you can find this hidden passage, it eventually leads to some of the best caves in Florida. But few people know of this passage or are able to find it. It is way back off the main line, and you need to make sure you have taken the correct passage, and one misplaced fin kick and visibility goes to zero. Like I said earlier, this area is very treacherous. The difficulty in finding the line is to keep inexperienced cave divers from venturing here until they are good enough to at least find the line without killing themselves. This new passage itself is one of those gateways, but shortly, you dig for a buried triple junction on this line that goes perpendicular to another line that takes you into this beautiful but tight cave.
Wow.
We're just going to pretend we know what that means.
I don't understand at all.
We're just going to pretend that we know what that means. If you accidentally go straight and miss the triple junction to the new passage, it becomes as bad as you can imagine. Even with three tanks on a dive, it is a push to get far into this tunnel. And considering this new passage is a tight squeeze with lots of line traps and silt, there needs to be a large safety factor built into your breathing gas supply, more than we usually would save. A line trap is where the line goes into a space too small to get your hand into, and when exiting in potentially zero visibility, you would not be able to keep a hand on this line. Thus, when you feel into the crevice as far as possible and feel no line, you must remember how you saw or felt it swimming in and feel for it in its approximate location exiting the crevice.
So you're kind of detaching from the ship.
Yes. And then you have to remember how it looks, but sometimes you can't see it. So you have to remember how it feels.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Cosi. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Cosi starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Cosi.
As the number one selling walk-in tub in North America, SafeStep walk-in tubs are built to maximize your safety and comfort. Each tub comes standard with a dual hydrotherapy system, so you can enjoy the luxuries of bathing comfortably at home. Soothing jets increase mobility and ease pain.
while the rainfall shower head refreshes you from head to toe. Visit SafeStepTub.com today to request your free quote and ask about our special offers.
Feeling around in a zero-visibility, tight cave quite some distance from an exit is not a position you want to be in for any longer than absolutely necessary. Also, since the limestone is eroded and thus very grabby, it is very easy to misplace a fin kick or an elbow or a piece of gear, and visibility turns to mud, all while you are being hooked onto something and potentially having something pulled from your gear. I want to enter this last tunnel with as much breathing gas as possible just to handle potential issues. This first secondary passage we jumped to is not clearly surveyed or drawn on any map, and no one, other than the person who put the original line in, has any idea how far back this area goes, or even if it ends almost right away. We would need to make sure not to miss that buried triple junction up ahead on this line. We do not want to go straight ahead on the first of these secondary lines, because if we miss the line junction, we enter the gateway, which is bad. What we should have done while looking for that first new line is to tie off to the exit slash main line we were currently on, and spool out one of our reels of line until we found the new line that has been permanently set in this secondary tunnel.
So you're like monkey barring.
Yes.
To the new one.
Coming out the same way, we would pick up the line and reels as we exit, even if by feel. Putting out reels uses time and precious breathing gas, and we were already a little low at this point in the dive, as the purpose of this side excursion was to just verify that we were at the correct jumping off point from the main line. We figured it would be fast and quick. I would just go and spot the location of the new line and swim back to Mondo, waiting for me on the main line, and we would note where this jumping off point was in relation to the new distance marker on the main line. I developed, and unfortunately talked buddies into this very bad and lazy habit in several other locations. I had misremembered doing this same procedure at this same location before. No reasonable and death-avoiding cave diver should consider ever doing this. I am almost always the one leaving the existing line, as I am good at spotting new line. I guess from years of spearfishing, I catch anything out of place. What I would do is have my buddy shine his light directly at me as I take off to look for this new line slash passage, and I never lose sight of his light by glancing behind every few seconds. No line is put out by me, and I'm free swimming. Then I can backtrack to their light when returning. One bad fin kick, and this place is silted out, and I may never find my way back. The further the distance, then likely the more tunnels and crevices and alcoves on the way that you may have to feel your way through if you lose sight of your buddy's light. Thus, I have a good chance of running out of air before ever finding my way back to my buddy and the line I came in on if something goes wrong. Point being, this is very dangerous to do. And he's saying, yeah, don't do it.
So he's going without a line.
Yeah, he's saying, don't do this.
Sounds like hasn't he already said this is kind of rule number one?
Yes, but he's saying, I am very experienced and this is a shortcut that I have done, but I wouldn't do again and don't advise doing. But he's explaining it.
Yeah.
This shortcut,
I mean, it sounds like they've been doing it for over a decade
at least. Well, he has. I don't know if he and Mondo have together, but yes. This shortcut method assumes a straight passage in relatively silt-free area, along with no false leads along the way. Three things this excursion does not have. In this particular case, Mondo would be slightly off the line as I needed to go around a corner, but Mondo would still be within sight of the main line and me, assuming no silting occurs. This has always worked except once, and it took me 45 minutes to find my way out that one time. My buddy on that dive, not doing his part, was the problem, but Mondo is the most reliable buddy I have ever had, so it should be a non-issue, I assume. We get to the spot I think is where the ongoing passage is. The new line leading into the new passage is 200 feet away. It is around a bend, and I have a very soft and thus easily silted bottom. And there are lots of alcoves and dead ends and ledges in this area. I signal to Mondo to stay on the line, or close to the line, and shine the light directly at me, as we have done dozens of times in other cave systems. I swim out, but do not glance back to check on Mondo's light, since any extra movement by me will silt out the entire area, rendering visibility basically null, and I always trust Mondo to do his part. I see the second precipice that I believe is the beginning of the new lined passage, and from there I should be able to see, if I am in the correct spot, the new line tied off very low on the wall about 25 feet ahead of me on my left. Since Mondo's mask was fogging, which I did not know, he was not able to see anything very well. He wasn't even able to see the line, just my fins in front of him during our entire turnaround from Challenge Sync. I had signaled Mondo to stay in the area of the main line, shining the light on me. I never waited for a confirmation hand signal from him that he understood what was happening before proceeding. He had no idea what was happening. He thought we were just swimming, still on the main line. Like I said, I swam to the first of the two precipices I was planning on using to verify the new passage and line without turning around to verify the light that Mondo was supposed to be shining on me. Unbeknownst to me, he was following me. Add to this that since his vision was impaired, he was silting and zeroing the visibility behind him by his badly placed fin kicks as we were advancing through this new tunnel. I get to the second precipice, hovering just perfectly so as not to disturb the silt, and I can see the new line about 25 feet ahead of me, and I turn around to exit via Mondo's light and realize he is directly behind me and the entire passageway from whence he came is being enveloped rapidly by a cloud of zero visibility silt. I try to get a beeline to where I think we came from, which was a very big mistake. But the turning around and looking and hovering caused me to have no idea which way was which. Going out by feel was next to impossible due to all the alcoves and ledges and false leads we passed on the way into this passageway. We could get horribly wedged into something or just waste lots of time and breathing gas fumbling around. I started to lead out in the direction I was trusting was the right way. Looking back on this, the first thing we should have done was to make it to the new line in the new passage before we lost sight of it. We could tie off to that line and then use the wheel spoke method of feeling around in an arc of 365 degrees after anchoring to that line until we found the line in the main passage we came in on. However, going through my mind was that the longest reel I had attached to my backside was only 150 feet long, and the exiting line in the main passage was 200 feet away. I would need to tie two reels together, and each time I went back to my anchorage, after not finding the exit line, I would have to undo, however I had tied them together, redo it over and over again, wasting more time and thus more breathing gas, which was already running low. Mondo had a 200-plus-foot reel with him, and I should have thought about just grabbing that off his backside. However, I was sure I could make it to the exiting main passage line without a hitch. But in the zero visibility and the confusion and the worsening visibility by the second conditions, I evidently went in a circle while swimming. But I was shortly able to make out the main line I was looking for, or so I thought as I did find a line. Mondo now led the way out, and we were only a few feet when he gave me the signal to turn back. He realized we were actually on another line, which neither one of us had a clue was there, nor where it went. I'm still not sure, but it appears that either there is another line somebody left in there, or who knows. There should be no other lines in there, and due to the bad visibility, I never saw any other lines anyway. There is usually a protocol for color of lines, whether it be a main line that leads out or a spar line like we had been using for when this started. However, this is not always followed. Lines get changed as they age, and the visibility was so bad that we were dealing with lines almost completely by feel anyway. I trust Mondo implicitly, so I am not about to have a discussion with him with hand signals and touch in almost zero visibility as we are both running low on gas at this point. He had seen the end of the line and knew we were on some other line that neither of us had any clue about, but there was no easy way to communicate this to me. I assume he just saw something that indicated we were going wrong. We turn and I go off in the lead now. We have since developed a hand signal for end of line, if this ever happens again. I am now leading us into the further bowels of what is one of the gateways, but I still wasn't sure where we were or what we were even doing. Or what direction we were going. Are we heading further in, this horrible unmapped area? Are we going parallel to something? Are we heading out? Are we going into a dead end? If it turns out we were heading into a gateway I was afraid of, that would be a death sentence since we were getting further and further away from our exit. I think we possibly are on that line, but I'm not sure. I can almost see nothing, but every once in a while I can see and feel we are in a very small rock crawl, barely making it through, bending and turning upside down and maybe having to remove a tank, which I did not do. And no idea how long this restriction is, and if it gets tighter, where I will not be able to turn around, especially with my tanks still attached. So they're going blindly into a tightening area, and they have no idea if it's getting smaller or how long it will go.
And we don't know the way back.
Oh my God.
It's like a labyrinth.
Yes. I know Mondo is behind me as he bumps into my fins every once in a while as I work through these restrictions ahead of him. I give him the signal to turn around as I think this is the line I was afraid of. He insists that we continue, so I figure he knows something I do not, and I trust him. What he knew was that the other end of the line was dead. We have already committed enough time, somewhere between 5 to 10 minutes, and thus a lot of very valuable and diminishing breathing gas to this, and if it does not pan out, we may be done for anyway. I continue a little farther and feel the other dead end of the line, but I can barely see it. I'm able to turn around at this point, and I go back for Mondo, who is about 2 body lengths behind me, and indicate we need to turn around. He is not accepting that for some reason, and I figure either I am not making myself clear or he is assuming that something is wrong. Like I said, he knew the other end of the line stopped also, which I did not, and I can't easily make him understand I am now seeing another end to this line. I figure the best thing to do is to just squeeze past him, if I can, in the opposite direction. He'll either follow me, or if he goes up a little further, he will understand that the line is ended. I figure he will be right behind me shortly, either way. We did not have a lot of time or gas to have a long discussion about this. I did not know this is the last time we would see each other on this dive. The visibility was bad coming through these passages in the rocks the first time. Now coming back, it was worse due to our initial swimming / crawling, and now moving basically entirely by feel. And there were restrictions that I knew were very tight and curvy. I suddenly feel rock in front of me, but I know I can get through it as I did before. All I did was keep in my mind's eye the direction to go, and then get physically and mentally as small as possible and just keep trying to feel through something, get stuck, back out, try again, etc. Until I could feel myself get through to the other side. There were about 3 or 4 of these, and each time I expected to feel a bump behind me from Mondo, but that never came. I obviously knew at this point that we were in a lot of trouble, but at least I knew what was happening to me. I had no clue if Mondo was wedged in some place, hurt, out of gas, or whatever. I knew he was not panicking as he does not have that gene. Panicking is death. There were lots of line traps, also just to add to the issues. Between the suffocation, the claustrophobia, the darkness, the loneliness, your mind can break. I've also heard of other cave divers realizing their clock has been punched, using their last few minutes to write a goodbye note to their significant other, with one guy even apologizing for screwing up. I do not carry a slate, partly due to the fact I might be tempted to waste time and breathing gas to just do that. At one of those restrictions I had to go through, in the little visibility I had a few seconds in the murk to see the pressure gauges from each tank. My heart stopped when I saw how low the first tank was. Then I looked at my second tank gauge and realized my first tank was the more full of the two. I still had no clue if I was even going in the right direction, how far I was from anything, and on which line I was. These commitments to passages and directions had to be correct from now on. No allowance or breathing gas for miscues. I stopped for a few seconds while trying to twist through another unseen restriction to contemplate just accepting this fate, but I figured that I would go forward until my last breath. I started to think whether Clint Eastwood's Man with No Name movie character would give up. That's not a joke. It helped to clear my mind and keep my thinking focused, and I think I even issued a little laugh, which wasted some breathing gas, but was worth it. I continued on, not knowing what to expect from this line. It did come to an end, which Mondo had seen earlier. Like I stated earlier, normally I would tie off on this line while looking for other lines so I could make my way back to this line if I couldn't find anything. However, this was an orphan line that went nowhere, and if I did not find anything soon, this was the final bit of guessing I would ever do. I saw no reason to hitch my wagon to this line for any reason at all. I just took off in the mud, feeling for and looking for anything that looked or felt like a passage or line. I found a line, somehow, in about 20 feet, but this crapped out after 30 feet or so of following it. Then I launched off into the mud again and somehow found another line within about 30 feet, which crapped out shortly also. This is when I started swimming slash crawling from area to area to find any lines or passages. Looking back afterwards, I think there may have been several short sections of line just north of us in passages that we had never been in. I can now see my pressure gauges and realize all hope is basically gone unless I find the main line almost right away. I moved towards a potential opening of passage and saw nothing but blackness. I stopped at this point, deciding how I wanted my body, if ever found, to be found. I know that unless I find that exiting passage line right away, there was not enough breathing gas to get me to my stage tank. I just stopped and relaxed and decided to just swim through this opening, bombs away. My eyes adjusted and my light barely caught a line. I figured it was another orphaned, nonsensical line and was not too excited. I swam to it, and it looked like it might be the exiting line I was trying to find. I knew my gas was very limited, but how limited I did not choose to know. Gauge readings are unreliable when they are that low, plus when the tank hits a certain level, the regulator will not breathe, even though there are at least a few breaths still left in the tank. At that point, I would take off the regulators and somehow get breaths off the tank valve, which is very difficult, but what choice is there? Visibility had cleared a bit to see this line in this passage I am now in is fairly clear. I swam along this line for about 2 minutes and came across a line marker indicating that this was indeed the main passage exit line. I read the distance marker and knew exactly how far my stage cylinder was and in what direction and knew my only choice was to skip breathe. This is when you hold your breath after each inhalation for as long as comfortable. You will end up with a CO2 headache that will last for a day, but that was the least of my concerns. I swam purposely and efficiently along that line, amazed that the tank I was breathing off of had not emptied, but knowing that when it did, I just had a little bit in the other tank. Just a little further, I kept thinking to myself. Just a little further, waiting for a non-breath at any moment. After about 10 minutes, my light reflected off of the stage tanks Mondo and I had stored. I was both relieved that I had gotten to my tank and very depressed as I knew Mondo was out of gas and luck by now. This stage cylinder had enough gas to get me to the exit with a large safety factor. I got the new tank and I retraced my steps back into the cave to see if I could find Mondo. I still had no idea where he was. I figured if he was close and I got to him soon, even if he wasn't breathing, I could shove a regulator in his mouth and hope for the best. I eventually turned and started my exit from the cave. My next stop was to exit at the platform that I described at the beginning. It was about a 20 to 30 minute swim at this point while I kept looking behind me. What I found out later, while I was likely still lost in the maze somewhere, Mondo had found his way to the main exiting passage and line and decided to head left instead of right to our stage bottles to an opening off another passage. He remembered a shortcut to an emergency exit that was slightly closer than our stage cylinders. Mondo had done the right thing, but in my mind, I myself could not remember which spot was closer. The cylinders were a known distance, and I could skip breathe very, very well if I had to. Mondo and I, and some buddies, went in the next day and have tried to work out where or what happened. Our buddies the next day saw the other lines that we had probably been on. They had never seen them before either. However, they had visibility on that dive to at least see they were not the lines we initially thought.
So I can't believe skip breathing is a thing, but it makes so much sense.
Yeah.
At the same time, holy crap, are you not shitting yourself? Like, anytime you put the regulator in your mouth, you could just be toast.
Yeah, he was terrified.
How do you keep your cool?
I don't know, but he, you know, keeps on saying that panicking is death. So you gotta be like a monk at that point. Like, how do you have that much self-restraint that you don't panic in a moment like that?
Yeah, I don't get it. Like, do y'all meditate? Like, what's
they
going
must.
On? You have to. I just can't believe it. You're like holding your breath, but you're also swimming. Like you're working out.
Yeah.
Damn.
So now we have Mondo's version of the story.
Yeah, Mondo did the right thing, apparently.
Yes, he did. But Yeah, from Mondo's perspective, it's equally as scary, if not scarier, because his mask was fogging up from like very early on in the dive.
We forget.
We forget. So let's jump into Mondo's version.
Let's do it.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
I was experiencing mask problems, so I had to spread Dawn dishwashing soap completely over my mask lenses and then spit in it and wiped it on the lenses before the dive. But shortly after the dive began, my mask started initially fogging in the top left corner. It was annoying, yet I could still see pretty well. I didn't clear it because once you start clearing it, it seems to start fogging faster with more of the lens covered. In Challenge Sync, I should have gone up and spit in my mask to clear the fog, but knowing both Slip and I have ear problems, we just looked toward the surface and turned and headed back. Slip took the lead spot, and he took off very fast. This was to keep from hovering in place too long, waiting for me to come down the chute, as his fins would stir up the silt and make the tunnel even siltier and harder to see than it already was, which I did not know he was doing at the time. But I hurried to catch up as I was afraid he was going to keep going, which he did not. The tunnel was a little hazy back there, and I didn't want to lose him. Pushing the way I did, even for this short burst, caused me to be breathing hard. I ended up fogging my mask really badly. Slip had no clue this was happening, as I never told him I was having an issue with my mask fogging, and since he was behind me going into the system, he had no opportunity to see my mask. We then continued on several hundred feet before it all went to hell. Slip apparently signaled me to stay on the line so he could go look for the passage that eventually leads into the water source passage, just like we had done at the waterhole passage on the way in. I was continually clearing my mask and looking at his light and the line, but my mask was very foggy by this point. I didn't see the signal for me to stay, and he didn't wait to see my non-response or to make sure that I stayed, so I blindly followed him. I saw there was no line and tried to signal to him, and he noticed the same when he saw I had followed. We ended up in a silty mess with no line, and what we assumed was backtracking, Slip could barely make out a line in the mud and saw that it was gold-colored, which is usually a color for a main line, like the one we had initially followed in from the entrance to the cave system. So he figured we made it back to the main line, but that was not the case. We followed it until the end, where I saw it was tied off to a rock with no ongoing line. Slip never saw that end as he was wedged behind me in something not much larger than a coffin. He only knew that I turned it, and he was sure for a good reason, and we could discuss it later if we ever got out. We both trusted each other. I sent Slip back the other way, figuring we just went the wrong direction. We have since developed a hand signal for end of line, which we never thought we would need before. Visibility was mostly zero, with occasional minor clearing. We were now on a line in tight conditions with almost no visibility that went nowhere, much less to an exit. He came back and tried to get me to turn around, but once again, we had never developed that end of line hand signal. I knew that going back would not get us out, but he was never informed it was the end of the line at that other end also. I guess he figured I just made an assumption it was the wrong direction and turned us before going too far, as the passage possibly gets even worse the deeper you go into it. He was pretty adamant, but I knew what he was facing on the other end, and he knew what I was facing on this end. We unintentionally separated. Basically, he crawled over top of me, figuring I would get to the end right away and come back after seeing slash feeling the line end. I kept going and saw the line ended and turned around to catch up with Slip, and he assumed I would just be a minute behind him. I knew things were not looking good, but I wasn't too worried because Slip and I always figure things out. We have been told that before by some well-respected cavers, and I guess we started to believe it. I knew we were in trouble, but panicking will kill you 100% of the time. I knew I was in trouble because I was on a line that had no connection to the main line or a continuous line. Slip was gone, and I had no idea where, and I knew we were screwed. We had been in some extremely hairy conditions before, but this was by far the worst. Not because of the severe silt out, but we did not have a line to the exit. I stopped to gather myself and thought, this is it. This is where I die today. Until I heard a voice that told me to follow my training. Slip at this point was out of the picture. We were separated and neither had any idea where the other was. We were both on our own, and are almost in complete silt out with zero visibility, in thin mud essentially. I had no idea how we got to where we did, and had no idea where in the cave I was to even use an educated guess to get me out of there. I looked into the silt cloud to see if I could see any bubbles, or movement, or a line signaling that Slip was out there. For all I knew, he had run out of breathing gas and I had crawled over his body in zero visibility, assuming it was a rock. I saw nothing and it sunk in as to how truly alone I was. I could no longer think of Slip. He either made it out or he is dead. As I clung onto the rock, waiting for that last breath, thinking that I'm going to die here, I heard a voice telling me to follow my training. You will not die today. I couldn't get to my reels on my lower back strap, so I loosened my waist strap, twisted it around, and got one of my line reels. I tied it to the end of the line I was on and went searching. I went off the line I was tied to, went up and down the opposing wall, and swept to the left. Had I gone to the right, I would have ended up in the water source tunnel, which would have just gotten me further into the passage with no exit. At the end of my line on my reel, at the bottom of the wall, I saw a gold line. I tied in, knowing Challenge Sink or Olsen Sink were to the left, and not knowing how far my stage bottle was to the right, I took the safest and fastest way out to Olsen Sink. I looked both ways up and down the tunnel to see if I could see Slip, but nothing apparent. I knew I couldn't be too far from the line jump lines we had passed on the way back from Challenge Sink. The line to the left would take me back to Challenge Sink, which is virtually impossible to climb out of with gear attached. Even without gear, it's very difficult. But a little closer was Olsen Sink, another opening in the overhead rock, so I headed there. Upon arriving, knowing that there was nothing I could do to help Slip at that point, I did my 3-minute decompression safety stop before exiting the water at Olsen Sink. But it was everything I could do to not just go straight up and get out of the water. At that point, my emotions caught up with me. I just wanted to scream because I wanted out of the water, yet I knew I had to stay down for 3 minutes at least. Surfacing was like setting me free. I could breathe fresh air again and was no longer in the underwater prison that came close to taking my life and possibly already too the life of my closest friend. Once I could surface, I was hoping to see Slip at Olsen Sink, but he was not there. I had no idea what his fate was. I only knew that I was still alive and was going to make it. While still in the water, I looked for the best shot to get out so I could walk to the bank leading to the road. It was about 25 feet up and at a 45-degree angle to the ground surface. There was a lot of ground vegetation and underbrush. Knowing at that point that Slip was either dead or alive and my actions would have no consequence, I did not rush getting my gear off, getting up the bank, and hiking back to the parking lot. Slip had likely passed out by now. I was in a state of shock at that point, knowing that I escaped death, but pretty sure Slip had not. I was exhausted, both physically and mentally. As I pulled myself out of the water, I sat on the bank, gathering enough energy to make the hike up the banks around Olsen. I could feel tears welling up, but choked them back as I had to get up the bank and hike back. It took approximately 10 minutes to make it to the top. I got to the top, sat for a few minutes, then proceeded to walk down the road. I had left my gear at the bottom edge of Olsen Sink. At that point, I didn't care what happened to it. If Slip was dead, I would probably never go in a cave again. Even if by some miracle he was alive, I still, at this point, had no intention of ever getting into a flooded passage ever again. I didn't have the energy to haul the gear up or carry it back, so I knew it was better staying down there. After walking on the road for a few minutes, heading back to the parking lot where this started, I was thinking about a previous dive when Slip and I were doing a surface interval in Ulsan and we found a helmet floating. Hoping no one was attached, Slip went over and grabbed it, and no one was attached, fortunately. A few minutes later, a couple of guys surfaced and had no idea where they were. It was decided amongst the four of us that they would be better off climbing out and hiking back to the parking lot for their safety. Slip told them halfway up the bank to enjoy their walk of shame. And now I'm walking that walk, not knowing if my buddy is dead or alive. Slip felt bad saying that as it was a joke. We pointed them in the right passage to exit the cave system safely, and they had enough air, but they were spooked. We should have turned our dive and escorted them safely underwater out of the cave rather than having them hike out. 20/20 hindsight, I guess. After walking a couple hundred feet, I saw a car headed toward me on the road. I moved to the side, and the car stopped, and our friend Brian got out and came running toward me. He says very little in life, but was very outspoken when he saw me. I do remember him saying that he was glad I was alive and he had to get me back to the group. The only thing I said at that point is, did Slip make it? Brian assured me that he had, helped me get into the car, and we drove back to the parking lot. I was glad to be alive. I would get to see my dog, Willow, again. I was glad Slip was alive. I was exhausted. I am sure at some point that there was fear, terror, stress, and whole other range of emotions that were inside that I cannot discern or even describe. We pulled into the parking lot. The guys noticed that there were two people in the car instead of one. They all came over with hopes that it was me. After many hugs and expressions of concern, many emotions, we were all able to leave, and leave that day behind us. But could we? Someone went in to tell Tim, the cave instructor who was looking for my body, that I was safe. 911 was canceled, and the guys hiked down and retrieved my tanks at the water's edge in Olsen's sink, but my emotions were definitely raw. My reel and stage bottle were still in the cave, and someone had to retrieve them. Cost seems unimportant now, but they are all retrievable items. I discovered that one of my lights was missing and likely had rolled underwater on the bank of Ulsan. It should also be retrieved. Slip and I planned to retrieve my stage tank, which would be on the way to either get my reel or get my light, but not both on the same dive. Slip and I decided to get the stage and find the light on that dive that we planned for the next day. Getting back on the horse, that threw you.
Dude, they went back the next day?
Sure did. The other guys went and got the reel. The dive to get the gear the next morning was not feeling good. I was dreading it. After the previous experience to put tanks on and go back underwater under overhead rock in some small passages was actually almost more terrifying than the ordeal the day before. We dived, everything was okay, and the dive ended, but it couldn't be soon enough.
Guys, you don't have to go get it. I wonder why they felt that they needed to go back so soon. I mean, maybe it was the cost, or they just didn't want this to consume their lives, but, or, you know, ruin what they love doing. But
I guess it was quick. Yeah. I mean, I guess it was just like, we shouldn't leave stuff down there. I don't know. Like, we should go retrieve our things. I don't know, but that seems very quick.
Yeah.
I believe we all have angels that watch over us. I talk to mine every day. That fateful day, I believe that was the voice I heard to follow my training from 23 years earlier. I believe that it was them that guided me to sweep left as I ran my reel out. I believe Slip's angels guided him out. There are too many synchronicities in what we do that give me what comfort level I have to go back in and dive. Slip follows a rule that if at least three somewhat significant things go wrong before a dive, usually gear but not always, walk away. No more shortcuts, glad it's over. I was exceedingly close to having an extremely bad situation that could have turned out much worse. One or both of us could easily have died. We have done quite a few dives since then. The joy is not the same. Whereas I used to like small, tight caves even with a fair amount of silt, now if a puff of silt keeps me from seeing, my heart drops and I remember the helpless feeling as it flashes before my eyes suddenly. I don't panic, that would kill me. But that feeling isn't an enjoyable one. In time, I'm sure these feelings will diminish. The sooner, the better. Both Slip and I played a part in this situation so we can blame each other or accept that we both had part and there was blame in no one. I am thankful I lived through it. I am thankful for the guidance of my angels, and I am thankful for basically everything in my life, because that day, if it didn't turn out the way it did, I would not have a life left to be thankful for. And now we go briefly back to Slip, but this is our last paragraph. That night, Mondo and I went out to dinner at our favorite Chinese buffet, where I had my usual comfort food of hot and sour soup, while Mondo had, after his entree, his usual comfort food of chocolate pudding and ice cream. We did not talk much. I was spending the night at his place, not too far from the cave. This night, we both took sleeping supplements. We spoke about this the next morning and realized every time either one of us closed our eyes, it put us back in the zero visibility, water-filled, claustrophobic labyrinth at least 35 minutes of an unknown direction from the closest exit location. This is a horror scenario for even the most experienced cave divers. The odds of either one of us coming out alive is incredibly small. The fact that both of us made it out independently makes me wonder about things Mondo says about spirituality. I especially think about that when I realized that the light I had been using dimmed significantly after about 45 minutes, however it can be used for about twice that time but gets dimmer and dimmer. We always carry backup lights, so that's not a problem. This dive lasted 2.5 hours, and I forgot to change lights. How could I even see the line? I have no idea how we are both still upright and breathing. We both still have some sleepless nights. It never goes away. I guess we both have a touch of PTSD, maybe. And then he sent me a picture of the two of them, what he says, rocking out on a boat before embarking on another lousy hole in another lousy swamp bottom leading to another lousy cave system, and loving it. So they are still diving.
Wait, can I see?
I'll check with them first, but if I can, I'll put up the pictures on the Instagram so you can see as well.
Yeah, they just kind of look like a couple of wise guys, you know?
Yeah.
Just having a good time. Well, that's awesome. I mean, I can't believe they survived either, and I don't even understand half of the technical jargon nor the difficulty involved here. So, I mean, the fact that Mondo had a spiritual experience, like, totally relatable. I'm like, when Slip was saying, yeah, I pretty much freed, I mean, I'm thinking of it as free diving, where you're not attached to anything. He's just, like, free diving from a dead end to maybe.
That's what he was doing.
Yeah, and into like the unknown.
Yeah.
I mean,
and in zero visibility.
Insane. Yeah, and in an opening that has no obvious path back to where you need to be.
Right.
Yeah.
It seems like very unlikely that they would have made it out of this scenario, at least both of them, and they both did, which is why it's like so, one, impressive, and two, just like confusing. Like, how did that happen? But yeah, this was an epic of a story. Thank you so much to Slip and Mondo for sending it to me.
Yeah, I'm impressed by the vocabulary.
Yeah.
It was well written. I felt like I didn't feel like I was completely lost at any point.
Yeah.
I think is a good testament to how well they explained it.
Yeah, it made sense to two people who have zero experience in any of this stuff. So yeah, thank you to them.
Yeah, and I just feel so thankful that anyone would take the time to write something out that is this detailed and well thought through for us to read on our silly little podcast. Like, thank you so much for doing that. I mean, I can't imagine how long this took to put together. So I'm really appreciative and thankful that you did that and we can have this opportunity to share the story.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for sending it to us. I do think that it was pre-written for another purpose and he sent it to us.
But I
agree with the sentiment.
Oh,
like,
okay.
Even with that, like, thank you so much for giving us your story and allowing us to share it with our listeners, because it's really cool. And the fact that these two men who dive and like have these epic adventures, like, listen to our podcast is so like funny to me. Like, it's not funny. Like, I'm appreciative. I'm like, that's super cool that cool people are listening. Like, it's just very cool.
Yeah. But from now on, anytime we do a cave diving story, we're probably going to call back to Slip and Mondo.
Oh yeah, of course.
And be like, God, Slip has got to be kicking himself right now because we have no idea what we're talking about in this cave diving story.
Well, now we'll have a better idea because we have learned so much in this episode.
Yeah, we got to be like, yeah, you got to go back to the main line.
Yeah,
you
this
never
is a secondary line. You
tie
don't
yourself
stay
off.
Stay on a secondary line that could lead anywhere.
What's going on? The triple line.
The triple junction.
Line, the line jump line. Perpendicular.
Yeah, or left. Vertical or upside down.
Zero vis. Don't kick the flipper.
You'll silt up the room.
You'll silt up the whole fucking
You'll
room.
You'll silt up the joint. What the hell are you doing?
I think that's what we're going to take from this story is don't silt up the fucking joint.
Yeah,
right?
Don't silt up the place.
Stop with the flippers. Relax. Panic means death 100%
Panic
of the time.
Panic means death. You heard it here. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, that was quite the story. I feel like we have talked about all of it.
What's your good thing? You start off this time. Give us a palate cleanser.
Before I do that, I want to say if you have a story of your own, please send it to us and we will maybe read it in a listener's story. It doesn't have to be this long. Like it can be this long or it could be shorter and we can add it to a listener's episode where we have a bunch of them. But either way, send it to notodaypodcast@gmail.com. And yeah, that is my little spiel. But my good thing is that we purchased an art print for our basement. And it's dogs playing poker.
Yes.
And I'm obsessed with it. My sister has a picture that is dogs playing pool. And it's called Jack the Ripper, which I really love because
really?
It's like ripping pool shots. And he's a Jack Russell Terrier or whatever the hell it is.
That's
anyway,
fun.
It's very much that vibe. And the dogs playing poker are everything to me. So I can't wait to have it on the wall. Yeah. And that's my good thing. Short and sweet. What's yours?
Can my good thing be that I'm not working next week?
Yeah, of course your good thing can be that.
Okay. Well, this might be a little cheating, but I did say that our good thing is the trip with our friends.
Yeah.
The other part of that I'm very excited about is the part where I don't work.
Yeah.
That's going to be fun. I don't think I've taken a continuous week off in a long time.
Yeah.
But I'm getting a full week and it is going to be fun. And hopefully relaxing.
Vacation, baby.
Yeah, yeah.
Come on, vacation. Oh,
that's my good thing.
Before we sign out, I mentioned our merch that has launched. By the time this episode comes out, it will have been launched for about a week. And I have a link that I can read to you that's like less cumbersome. So our merch is www.teepublic.com, which is like teepublic.com/stores/not-today.
All right. Run it back for us. Say it again.
www.teepublic.com/stores/not-today. It will be in the episode description and as well, it will be linked in our Instagram bio in the link section. So you can find it. I'll post about it. It'll be everywhere. But I just wanted to read it out in case you wanted to type it in from that. But yeah, thank you all so much for listening. If you would like to check out our merch, follow the links. If you would like to get a bunch of bonus content, head over to Patreon. A bonus episode should have come out this week. It did come out this week because I posted it. Head over there, patreon.com/nottodaypodcast. If you have a story of your own, send it to us at notodaypodcast@gmail.com. We have a TikTok that is not today podcast and a Twitter that is not today podcast, but the T on the end of podcast is a 3.
Because that makes sense.
And just keep breathing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall.
No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
E-commerce business owners know a successful business keeps customers happy. That's why smart retailers use ShipStation. Turn shoppers into loyal customers with cheaper, faster, and better shipping. Manage all your orders and returns in one place and save up to 90% on rates from all the global carriers. Go to ShipStation.com/program to sign up for your free trial. No credit card required, and you can cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com/program.